Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and for today, we are talking around, you know, something that many of us are coming into contact with on a daily basis, and that is mobile apps. And to help us to maybe navigate what the cost implications do look like, because some people have shied away from developing apps, thinking that it's an expensive exercise. And we have Nick Durant, founder and CEO of Bluegrass Digital, which is a local web, mobile and software outfit, here to just talk to us about what some of those cost implications and factors are, and whether it is really as expensive as people think to be developing an app. So, Nick, greetings to you.
Hello, Mudiwa, and hello, listeners.
Now, this is not the first time that we've actually had, Nick on the podcast before. You know, just looking, you know, through the archive, we had him last year in October, and at the time, we were talking about why it is necessary, you know, to have some of these skills and the business models around, you know, app development. But, you know, a year on and having gone through COVID-19, it does feel, you know, a little bit like we are existing in a somewhat different world to what we were, you know, just, you know, 12 or 13 months ago. So, Nick, a good starting point for us, just some insight into Bluegrass Digital, what you guys are doing, and perhaps how you've seen your business changing or being affected by the pandemic.
Thank you. So Bluegrass Digital, as you mentioned at the start, we're really a sort of software engineering company, or that's our background. We've really helped clients design and build products and platforms, which generally are around mobile application development and websites, for example. So a lot of the platforms and products we build often have a life cycle. So they're quite a vital part to our clients' sort of marketing or business side, business processing, for example. I suppose with the pandemic, you know, we've been in the business for over 20 years, and what we've seen in the last sort of 6 to 8 months since the pandemic, I think at the outset we didn't really know what to expect, but we've seen certainly an acceleration or demand in our services. Subsequently, a lot of companies pivoting into technology and to automate their business or look at online e-commerce functionalities within their business. And so what we found is actually a lot of demand and inquiries that have come out of it, which has obviously been a positive impact for us generally. So, you know, I suppose there's just been a real acceleration in the demand for technology across the industry.
And I guess on that front, because today we are here to talk about what some of the, you know, cost implications are when it comes to developing apps. So with, you know, with that as a backdrop, can you give us just maybe an overview of what developing an app actually looks like, and perhaps some of the costs that usually go into such a process?
Well, I think it's a good question, because it's often a lot of the inquiries come in with potential customers not really understanding what the costs are or the implications are on a mobile app. I suppose, like any piece of technology, you need to plan it out carefully, understand what you're trying to achieve. So often we go through a kind of workshop and a UX phase of work where we prototype out almost in a skeleton framework, the product that they're trying to create. So almost understand all the screens and user journeys that are required. So, you know, you may think it's quite simple, but actually after that process, often there's 30, 40, 50 screens that complete the entire product. And then really it's unpacking the design phase from there and costing it out properly. Understanding, again, you know, with an app, everyone thinks it's everything happens in the app, but actually there's a lot of data components or data layers that may exist in the cloud. So where is that data and content coming from? So a lot of that has to be thought about and architected as well. where you're going to control your data from. So maybe a web portal or in the traditional sense, like a content management system in a website sense. So there are all these different components that need to be considered. And obviously then comes down to the technology approach as well to make it cost effective, because generally with mobile applications, you know, that they have a life cycle to them. So once they go live, there's the cost of ownership really of running them in the different stores, which, you know, is primarily Apple or Android related, and therefore they are releasing platform updates fairly regularly every month, where you need to be ensuring that your app still works within their platform. So there are all these different aspects to consider when designing and building a mobile application.
So from your, you know, your experience, what are some of the costs actually involved in that process that usually have people shying away or saying, thinking that it's an expensive process to go through, or one that they can actually just do without?
Well, I think you always need to look at your business case and reasoning for having a mobile application, you know, and really having those objectives clear cut up front, and even doing a bit of your own market research. You know, occasionally, you know, people do come to us and really have not done much of that thinking already, you know, and gone out to determine, do they actually need a mobile app, for example? Because as I said before, there's a lot of aspects to the ongoing, you know, cost of running the app. Potentially something could be done in a mobile web or simply a website, a responsive website framework rather than an app. Certainly maybe a place you would start your journey if it's a new product. So there are a number of areas, but I think it also depends. Sometimes the customers are coming to us with maybe an existing web application or a system that they've got, which is very desktop orientated, and trying to make it more mobile friendly. Obviously, since the pandemic, more of us are remote, or we are remote workers and almost field workers in a sense. So a lot of the work they're doing out and about is on a mobile device. So are we extending their software application through a mobile device, for example?
You know, just talking to people on a daily basis, I know one or two people that on the consumer side, right? Because right now we're focusing a lot on the business, but usually when a business makes an app, they want, for client-facing businesses at least, they want their customers to engage with them through that particular platform. And I've actually had a number of people that choose not to download apps and do everything in a browser. You know, can you talk to us about, you know, perhaps some of the advantages or disadvantages? Because I think some people, you know, have this, I'll call it an app fatigue, where you're actually thinking, no, there's just too many applications, you know. So what would you say to people like that, that, well, that think they don't need, you know, that they are fighting that mindset on the consumer side, where consumers do think that they have too many apps already on their phones, and they're just wondering, what is this app doing that I can't do in, let's say, the mobile browser, for example?
Well, I think that's always an argument and business case for whoever's creating the app that you're using. But I think the reality is, certainly with a lot of the big brands and businesses, they are providing customers with options. You know, naturally, the mobile app provides a far better experience for the user. So if you think about yourself or any of the listeners, you know, our mobile devices are pretty much attached to us all the time. You know, even when we're sitting at home, they're on arm's reach away. And, you know, we tend to access our banking and all the different utilities we do, from booking flights, you know, buying our shopping now with a lot of the big brands in South Africa, you know, pushing a lot of quick delivery apps out there. So, you know, the app environment provides a lot more opportunity to provide better experiences, you know, in terms of securing payment and loyalty data collection, rather than a browser, which doesn't have the ability to really store data offline. So that's often an issue. You obviously need connectivity. So a lot of the apps allow you to sort of store local data, so you don't have to kind of fetch it all the time. It's content that's stored within the app, for example, and only really fetches data as and when it requires to do so. So, I mean, there are a lot of advantages. I think the fatigue aspect we all kind of are probably dealing with all the time, as my phone is littered with apps, which I probably don't use, but that becomes really a personal organization issue, I think, more than anything else, to really sort of streamline your life rather than sort of decluttering it, I suppose.
And then coming back to this issue of cost, how does it differ, I guess, getting on the mobile side at least, how does it differ getting on the two biggest app stores? Because there are a number of app stores out there. You know, you've got the iOS, you've got the Android app stores. At the same time, Samsung has one, Huawei has one. There are a lot of app stores that we can choose from, but the two dominant ones are iOS and Android. But I do understand that the process of developing and also the process of actually getting onto the various platforms are different and do carry some cost implications of their own. How does that look?
So I suppose, just stepping back, traditionally, when you were building an Apple iOS app or an Android app, you would build it in the native language. So generally, it would be Swift or Xcode for iOS and Java, Android, or Kotlin. These are the technologies which essentially are native technology. So you would almost have to build a separate app for the Apple Store and a separate app for the Android Store, which would mean you would actually end up having to build it twice. So it doubles your essentially doubles the development cost. So I suppose one area we focus on, certainly in the recent years, is React Native, which is really about building it once and having a code base that can be compiled natively to iOS and Android. So you can build it with a central code base and maintain that code that way, which obviously lowers the cost of ownership as well. And then you compile it to deploy into the Android and Apple iOS stores, essentially. So that's one major cost-saving approach to building your app. It is a common way we use today, certainly with a lot of the business and utility apps we build for clients. The actual running of the apps within the stores is relatively low. I mean, Apple require you to have a developer license if you want to put an app in the store, which is essentially $99 a year. And Google Play and Samsung are generally open source in their approach, so they allow you to deploy apps essentially without any cost. So I think the running of the app is more around maintaining the code base and making sure the app operates correctly in the relevant platform rather than the cost of the store itself.
React Native, very interested in this one. Is this something that you guys have developed?
No, React Native is, in fact, it was created by Facebook originally about 6-7 years ago. It's come to the fore in the last four years or so. So it's a JavaScript-based framework. So JavaScript is a common development language, which many web developers know. So it means the ability for those developers to skill up in React Native is a lot easier than other coding languages. So it's become one of the popular frameworks around for building mobile apps these days. And something we focused in, as I said before, over the last 4 years. So we've worked with big financial companies which have adopted the technology. It means, you know, we can train developers that are, you know, JavaScript-based developers to learn React Native and broadens the scope to have a broader community to build apps.
For developers, you know, out there that might be listening to this or someone who wants to get into the field, what advice do you have in terms of getting onto the two platforms? Because as you said, on the one end, you've got a more open source sort of mindset. And the impression sometimes is that it's easier to get onto Android than it is to get onto iOS. So specifically for iOS, right, how do you ensure that your app actually gets through that vetting process?
So the vetting process specifically obviously is more challenging with Apple. They're far more stringent. The process you generally submit once you've set yourself up and obviously create an account and pay your fees and have a developer account, then you submit your app once tested into the Apple process of review, and they obviously will review it usually within a week, and then they'll approve it or push back on anything they don't like. Common things are like payments. Apple like to ensure you're using their payment methods these days. They've become more stringent around that. So there are different aspects and rules, and that, I suppose that comes down to experience, knowing the ins and outs. But I think, you know, if you're going to learn how to build mobile apps generally and you want to go the React Native route, then it's about skilling yourself. There's a number of courses on a number of these learning platforms which get you started around React Native. But, you know, with some practice, you can very quickly start grasping the concepts and start learning how to deploy, firstly build React Native based apps, and then obviously the deployment process and how you compile it into an Apple iOS app or an Android app.
And then on that one, sort of as an extension, the local developer community in South Africa, when you look at how Epic Games has taken on Apple, you know, with its app rules, and also taken on Google to some extent, but more Apple. Is the local developer community paying attention to any of that, or is that sort of just something that's happening between, you know, two large international companies?
Well, I think I know in South Africa we have some great gaming companies that build games and obviously play in that market. I mean, you probably won't be surprised that we have local developers probably working for Epic Games and Apple directly from South Africa, given the way remote working works these days. So I think generally, you know, if you're in that community of gaming, then you would obviously be up to speed with what's going on there. Certainly how you build gaming-based apps is a different kettle of fish to sort of regular utility apps that we've been talking about today. And you would probably use a more native, you know, approach to building them, plus using sort of gaming engines like Unity, which is, you know, a different skill set altogether. So I think when we talk about gaming specific apps, you know, it's almost a different conversation, but we do have a good community here. You know, I think generally speaking, you know, our development community is strong, but you know, we are lacking deep experience across the board, and that's why it's a challenge really to find, you know, good developers. A lot of the React Native guys we bring on are often, you know, we having to sort of train them up or skill them up in that space to bring them onto our team. So I think there's still the whole question mark around lack of skills is still a challenge. And talking about our last podcast, I think that was a subject matter which, you know, is even more of a pressing issue now with the demand for technology.
And that demand in technology has meant that a lot of businesses have in some way become IT companies in of themselves. So as we sort of round up the discussion, you know, just to pick your brain on whether or not you think companies should be developing in-house talent for developing some of these mobile applications, perhaps as an extension to, you know, their IT investment as a whole, or whether outsourcing is to a specialized firm is a better bet, especially for companies that are still making that transition, you know, trying to gain a digital presence of some sort.
Well, I think you're right there. You know, every company is becoming a software company in some form. I think with a lot of our clients, we're working in an outsource arrangement, but we're augmenting their existing technology and software development teams in-house. So without a doubt, a lot of these, certainly a lot of the big companies will be building out capability in-house. I think a lot of them are realizing, you know, certainly with even conversations I've had in recent weeks, is that they're still struggling with capacity now that there are so many, I suppose, digital transformation projects coming through, and, you know, they're looking to outsource to companies like ourselves, where we can help their existing project roadmap, you know, and how they're going to deliver that work with their teams in-house or separately. So there's definitely space for both. And over the last 20 odd years, you know, we've done a lot of work overseas in the UK initially. You know, this outsource insource has been a question mark that's continually, you know, happened. You know, it goes up and down. Companies' policies change from time to time, but inevitably it's here forever. You know, the question around insource, outsource. So, you know, we look ourselves as partners with a lot of our clients as we support them on certain areas where they don't want to invest in those skill sets, or see us strategically as their mobile partner, for example, where they will focus on their internal systems and engine room, so to speak.
And then finally, when it comes to, you know, all of this, are you able to give us perhaps an idea of what the app development industry looks like in South Africa, at least from a financial point of view, or, you know, the number of apps that have, you know, been developed locally that are being developed each year, you know, how much actual money is actually going into, you know, app development from corporates, businesses, etc.?
Well, I think there's certainly a lot more emphasis on it this year with the pandemic. I don't have specific numbers to share, but I mean, certainly there's a large focus around mobile applications. We've seen an uptick in demand for that. We can see through advertising on television, even like the Checkers, the Pick and Pays, for example, the retailers, all pushing out apps to, you know, find adoption through customer loyalty and driving a revenue opportunity. So the mobile application space is growing. I mean, there are a number of companies that are specialists in mobile applications. We got awards like MTN App Awards that happen, you know, once a year. So they're supporting sort of the app development market. So, and then there's startups that are building, designing products that are really circled, or, you know, around a mobile application solution. So it's definitely a growing trend, and I don't see that changing given our dynamic, our sort of African sort of geographic and various dynamics that we have here, that often a first-time user to the internet may even experience that through a mobile device. So, you know, the mobile space is definitely big here in South Africa and Africa generally.
So that's been it. We're with Nick Durant, Bluegrass Digital founder and CEO, giving us some insight into what mobile app development is looking like at the moment, but more specifically around the cost implications when it comes to that, and also talking about what it actually takes to develop for the two platforms and some of the ways that people have come together to find, you know, unified code bases that allow them to have, you know, one set of code that can work on both Android and iOS, and also talking about how all of that helps to reduce some of the costs, and also talking about, you know, ending off talking about that debate of, you know, developing your own apps versus outsourcing, or, you know, perhaps a hybrid of the two. So thank you so much, Nick. Thank you so much for joining us for today.
Great. Thanks. Nice to be with you again.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
Good discussion with Nick just around app development in South Africa, and very important topic, especially given the level of digital transformation that's going on out there. As we said, this wasn't the first conversation we've had with them. We had them last year in October, and as we said, it was a completely different world. At the time, we're just talking business models. How do app developers make money? But now, it's not about that. It's more about how do you ensure that you actually do develop, but as efficiently as possible, because everyone in one way or another needs to have that digital presence. And also just answering the question of whether or not it is necessary to need an app. And there was a time when everyone wanted to have an app. But after time, you then realize that it just depends. And as you said, it depends on the business and what it is that you want to do with the specific application, right? And also some of the advantages, such as being able to store certain data on your device versus having to fetch it from some online storage platform or the cloud or something like that. All of these issues then feed into this. And also the app fatigue, right? If you're a business at the moment making an app, it needs to be something that is actually quite compelling and something that people are going to get utility and actual use out of. Especially, like I said, if it's a business, if you can make the user experience seamless, because people are interacting digitally, you know, on an increasing basis, but an app might be able to give you an added level of control and also give your user, a better experience of engaging with you. And an easier form of engaging with you. I just think about how the banks, for example, have been able to develop apps in South Africa, you know, the big banks, and how much people have been able to move away from traditionally having to go to banking halls, you know, all the time. People still do need that aspect, but it seems that a lot of people have decided to move, you know, just reflecting on the conversation with the FNB Gold and Easy CEOs a few weeks back on the podcast, where they said their app usage had increased by more than 20% during the lockdown. And all of those issues then feed into having some type of a compelling use and utility for your mobile app. You need to make it so that your user doesn't forget it. You know, if it's one of those things that you're able to create real value and people, you know, do see use in it, and it's not something that they use once and forget, then it makes sense to invest efficiently in one, you know, in one code base at best to reduce your cost, and then just make sure that you check all the boxes for iOS and Android, and then get yourself out there and into people's hands. So that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter, where #BDSpotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller, together with Modiehi Mashemayete. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.